Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The two-point conversion.
The discussion is that.
That's 100% me.
May, rolling, throwing back. Down the field, intercepted. The second for Monty Hooker ends the ball game.
Time now for WEEI Football Sunday with Arcan, Mego, and Shime. Now, WEEI Football Sunday.
Hey, good morning. How are you? Welcome in. It's Football Sunday right here on WEEI, Boston Sports Original. Arcand here, Mego here, Shime here, young Jacob back behind the glass. Your phone calls at 617-779-7937. We'll be joined by Nick Fitzy-Stevens in about 40 minutes as we get his take on all of this. He's not at the tailgate unless they send him to Chicago, which I don't think
he is in Chicago.
He is in Chicago.
Yes.
Well, never mind. All right. Fitzy from the tailgate, from behind enemy lines. I didn't even know that.
I should have known
that because he's not doing six rings today, right?
Correct. He posted a beer photo from a local Chicago brewery yesterday.
So he'll be hammered.
I'm pretty sure he was at Lou Malnati's last night.
Tremendous.
Was really getting the experience.
That's great. All right. So we got Fitzy coming up in about 40 minutes. Tom E. Curran joins the show at 11. We'll have Wiggy's Keys, hopefully. And Andy Hart, of course, joins the show at 12:30, along with everything else we're going to be getting to, including the Love Polar Coaster, courtesy of Mego here in about 20 minutes. But let's begin with our opening takes. The Patriots now coming into this game, a couple of rookie quarterbacks. I've been talking with Bears fans. You guys know Brian on our show in the afternoons. I did a Bears podcast this week, too.
Oh, okay.
I know. It was pretty awesome. And these Bears fans are so worried about their team. They think that it's the end of the world, and they lost two games. One of them was that crazy game with the Hail Mary at the end, which, Mego, I'm sure celebrated.
We can talk about that for 3 hours.
We probably could. And then last week, they got thumped by Arizona. So they're in a bit of a bad way right now, and I understand that. But you would think that they were the Patriots. Like, you would think that things were just beyond despair. Like, there's no way. We can't do it. So I'm looking at this game this week as the type of game where the Bears have just absolute backs against the wall. Here it is, season on the line. We got to go out there and win this. And for the Patriots, I don't really see this game as any different from any other game. Like, I look at these games. I know Mayo preached about a sense of urgency all week, and I'm glad that he did because I think this team needs that. But I just don't know where it's going to come from. That's sort of my thing here, and I'm not sure the rest of the season. Andy and I have been talking about this all week. Where do you go from here? Mayo was already talking about what he's going to do in the offseason. Like, he's like already on the beach. Like, this is a weird spot to be in, and I feel like Patriots fans, ownership, everybody is kind of unused to it because it's just been so long since we've had consecutive seasons like this. But here we are, week 9, week 10, and basically everybody's getting their vacation plans going. So I think this game's going to be ugly. I think this is going to be an ugly one for New England. Drake May is going to keep running eventually. There's 3 weeks of tape on him as a starter, and I think that people are going to get that. They're going to have someone stay back and spy on him. And if you take away his ability to run out of the pocket, this offense doesn't doesn't have anything else. So I'm not expecting much of a game today. I think it's going to be an ugly one, and I think that the Bears are going to get right. This is what the Patriots are now. They're a get-right team, and the Bears are going to get right at home against them, and it's going to be a tough one. I think we're going to have a tough one this week, guys.
I largely agree with a lot of what you're saying, especially about the get-right. They've been that team for Jacksonville. They were that team for the Jets the first time they played them in Thursday Night Football. They've been that team for Miami with Snoop Huntley at quarterback. They've been it multiple times. So I think it'll be a similar thing here today. But to me, the most compelling part, because like you were saying there, Christian, like you're basically in a lame duck season. To me, I want to see how Drake May looks when Caleb Williams is on the other side. And I know these quarterback comparisons in game are never a perfect idea because, yeah, they're playing against each other, but they're never on the field at the same time. I'm just curious about the comparison when they're in the same elements, the same environment. And honestly, I just kind of want to see the kids now. Like, I don't even need to ever see KJ Osborne again.
Yeah,
really nice
no.
guy to talk to in the locker room. But I just want them to throw everything out there and see what sticks. Because otherwise, what is the point of everything that you're doing on these Sundays? And I don't know what Javon Baker is, if he is even prepared enough to be getting more snaps than he's getting. I think you have to figure stuff out with Jalen Polk and see if you can get him right out there. And so to me, it's like, yeah, I guess I'm with Mayo on the beach looking deep into the future, because there's not that much about the present of the team that is very compelling week to week, I'm sorry to say. Yeah. So I think you have to look towards the future.
Outside of the quarterback, there is very little that is compelling about this team. But I think Bears fans are reasonably worried. Like, I think this week is going to be kind of an example on how broken that offense is. Like, I just don't think it works. Whatever they're doing, the Shane Waldron experiment has not worked. Matt Eberflus is an awful head coach.
They've tuned him out, too.
DJ Moore, in an interview on Chicago radio, was asked, like, if Matt Eberflus has the locker room still, and he goes, quote, "I don't know," end quote. Like, that is a disaster right now in Chicago, and I think you'll see that today. Like, it is going to be a disgust. It is going to be resemblance of that Patriots Miami game earlier this year with no Tua.
Great.
Like, that's how I feel like today is going to look.
That was a fun viewing experience.
It's going to be awful. It is going to be you want to turn your TV off kind of viewing, because I think Chicago's defense is really good, which is going to create problems for the New England offense. I think Drake May is going to be running around, but unfortunately, they're just not going to be able to get a whole lot done because the rest of the offense is horrendous. And I just think that the Chicago offense is so broken, they're going to make the Patriots defense look halfway decent. And, like, that's going to be – it is just going to be an ugly day of football,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's probably – and it's supposed to be very windy in Chicago today.
If
you can believe that, first of all, in the windy city, it's going to be windy there. And that's going to be tough for both guys throwing. I think Williams likes to take shots downfield. The Bears have not lost a home game yet this year, so there's that to remember as well. They're laying 6 points. We'll get to that later in our betting segment. But I think that, in general, you're looking at two teams that are in similar situations. They're at different stages of it, but they're in similar situations with their rookie quarterbacks, with the season not going the way that they wanted it to. You know, there's things to take away from this. And you look at the Bears as, I don't want to say a cautionary tale, but like, okay, here's another team sort of on the same track you are that did a very different job of surrounding their quarterback with players on offense, with an offensive line. The coaching staff got revamped. They kept the head coach, which, I don't know, does that remind you of anything? Like, it seems like...
Yeah, haven't they done this twice before?
They've done this twice before, and I feel like the Patriots did, like, a weird inverted version of it. Like, they fired Belichick while the Bears kept Eberflus, and the Bears fired both the coordinators. So, instead, the Patriots fired Belichick, promoted his coordinator, and then hired a guy that nobody else wanted to be the offensive coordinator. So I guess it's not exactly apples to apples, but it is kind of weird coaching decisions when it comes to your rookie quarterback and how you want them to progress and who you want them to learn from and all of that stuff. I think there's some similarities there, but when it comes to the way that they assembled their rosters around their young quarterback, there's no comparison. And the Bears only have two more wins, but there's no comparison. Who took better care of their quarterback? Chicago did.
Right, but I don't want to be somebody who sounds like it's just silver linings all over the place. But I do think that in comparison, when you're looking at the two situations, speaks so highly of Drake May.
Couldn't agree more.
And again, a very small sample size compared to Caleb Williams, who basically got crowned the starting quarterback when he walked through the Chicago airport.
Yeah, when he walked on the stage at the draft.
Yeah. So it's a much smaller sample size for Drake May so far. But look, could he do more to elevate the guys around him? I don't know. He's throwing some really great passes that are that they're just absolutely flat out dropping or bobbling. Yep. So I can't really put that on him. But I agree with you where you look at what the Bears did, and they had DJ Moore there, and they get Roma Dunze, and those guys are like putting up pretty pedestrian numbers.
Well, it's because Caleb has been so bad. Like, he is statistically the worst deep ball passer in all of football, which
he takes lots of shots, too.
And I think in part, too, the offensive line there is so bad that he's constantly trying to do what he did at USC, where he's just kind of like running around in the backfield trying to make something happen. And like guys like DJ Moore are just like, all right, I'm done with this. Like, he's tired of it. It's like, hey, let's run a play and actually just throw the ball on time for once. And that's just not what Caleb's doing, in part because the offensive line is so bad, and in part that's just not what Caleb wants to do. And so it has just been an absolute disaster there, especially the last couple weeks. Since that Jaguars game where they played really well, it has gone downhill rapidly fast in Chicago.
Yeah, you're looking at a team that is at a crossroads right now. Yep. Absolutely. And this will be the type of game where you could be right. There could be firings after this game. I feel like every other week, the Patriots are going up against a team whose coach may get fired. Like, if they lose to the Patriots, that's the defining line. All right, you want to keep your job, you better beat New England at home, all right? Or otherwise, that's it for you, Doug Peterson, or that's it for you, whoever, like that, you know? I feel like we're at that
point.
They
are the straw
that breaks
the camel's back.
It's
like,
true.
If you lose to the Patriots,
like, goodbye.
Wow. It's over for you. We just can't have this. We have standards here.
As it should be, by the way. Anything else you're looking for in this game other than the progression of Drake May? Is there anything else you're looking at this season other than the progression of Drake May?
The Bears allowed a ton of rushing yards last week. This is an opportunity for you to try and get Ramondre going again. It has been abysmal the last couple weeks for you.
I mean, bear watching this team run the ball. It's brutal.
It's so bad, and it makes no sense. I was actually on with Terp yesterday, and he brought up a great point. Like, for an offense that was planning going into the season being so efficient in the run game and good on defense, you would have thought that the run game would be, I don't know, just semi-creative.
Nope.
It's not. It's as plain Jane vanilla as it gets, and it is brutal to watch. I mean, Ramondre's averaging less than 2.5 yards per carry over the last 2 weeks. Last week alone, 12 carries, 15 yards for the running backs
Drake
combined.
Drake May is their leading rusher, not just last week, but up until the final 2 minutes of the game
is
the week
their
prior,
offense at
he
this point.
Was the leading rusher. And for me, like, when you look at the run game, yes, it's extremely frustrating to watch in real time, but it also makes me a little, more than a little, worried about the big picture questions with this team, where they go in, they know at least to some extent how bad their offensive line is and that it's going to be a challenge throughout the entire season. They think that they just have Ramondre Stevenson, who's the best weapon on the team. They don't
sign him to a $9 million contract, by the way.
About when they're going to be playing Drake May. So it's not like they plan for him to be this great rusher, somebody who has their entire offense going. And they sit there all through the summer and say, we're going to be a team that runs the ball. We're going to be a tough team that's physical, that wins in the trenches, that runs the ball.
Sure,
and it's completely the opposite of who they've been. And that makes me scared because I'm like, what did you see in the summer?
They have no.
What did you see in September?
They have no ability to self-reflect. There's no ability to identify the actual identity of this team. None. From anybody, from the coaches, assistant coaches, up to the GM. Like, nobody knows what they are and what they can be. They just say things and hope that it comes true.
It has a feeling of every week they're like falling out of the sky and they're trying to build the plane before it hits the earth.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it feels with this team. And so for me, it's like there's so many different, it's frustrating to even try to focus on what are we talking about this team this week, this game, outside of the direct matchups and Drake May, because the rest of it is just a big old mess. And I don't know if they're looking at it in a way that's going to be productive through the rest of the season.
On the topic of the run game, you're right. No one, Ramondre Stevenson and Antonio Gibson and Jermichael Hasty, they're just not running the ball. They're not getting any sort of openings to go through. It's been pretty bad. Drake May running the ball since he started his first start. Good
sentence
there.
Since
he did that, since he became the starter, how about that? He is leading all quarterbacks in the NFL in rushing. In yards per carry, in total yards, more than Jackson, more than Hurts, more than Murray, more than everybody. And I remember this week Mayo coming out and saying, we're not going to design any runs for Drake May because he just came out of the concussion protocol. We're not going to design those things. And I heard that. I thought it was an interesting comment because if he know, I mean, he's sitting there on the sideline watching the game, standing there. He knows that the only part of the offense that is productive at all is Drake May taking off and running. I mean, it's the only consistent thing. He's averaging 10 yards a carry. Like, he's picking up a first down every time he does that.
Correct.
And they've never designed one for him. It's always been because the pocket collapsed. It's always been because he had no other choice. He's running for his life. No one's open. And the pocket breaks down. So there he goes. And that's it. The only time this team is ever good is by mistake. Right? Like,
right.
That's basically what that is. It's broken plays. It's Drake May taking off because he has to. And Jerod Mayo's like, yeah, we're not gonna be doing anything like that. And I understand what he means. You know, when you're doing design runs for your quarterback, that quarterback's a running back. That's not the pocket breaking down. And
but he's
nobody
turning
over
into
the
a running back every time anyway.
Right, but those are plays where the receivers take the corners out of the play and the linebackers might be clear and you're not just running into the defense. You know, like that's...
But did they ever
It starts off as something else and then he runs. But now, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you do about it. If someone stays back and spies on him and then doesn't let him get out of the pocket.
Which is going to, as you said before, it's going to start happening.
People are going to watch
unless
the film on this kid.
Unless these teams are complete idiots.
Right. Yeah, but in theory, by doing that, it would open somebody up in the receiving game, theoretically.
So they could drop
in theory,
the ball?
In total theory, there would be that opportunity. Yeah, so they could drop the ball probably. But wouldn't
I know
it make
I'm
sense?
Being snarky, but it's the reality of the offense.
Yeah,
right
and
now.
Wouldn't it make sense that maybe you do design a couple runs with your quarterback involved, and maybe that helps your running backs a little bit. I don't know. Just throwing stuff against the wall since they don't want to. Like, maybe just design a run play for your quarterback, and maybe that'll help Ramondre find a hole. Like, it couldn't hurt at this point.
No, it certainly couldn't. We got a lot to get to here today on WEEI Football Sunday. The Polar Coaster is coming up next with Mego. Fitzy joins us later on in the hour, followed by Tommy Curran. We'll get our inactives at 11:30 and much, much more. Football Sunday brought to you by Cars for Kids, the easiest way to get rid of your old car. Donate today. Your car can be picked up tomorrow. Donate now at carsforkids.com. That's cars with a K and the number 4. Here's Chris Schein with what's trending.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jerod Mayo earlier this week, I thought that whole sense of urgency stuff was pretty interesting because he went on to talk about, you know, being a first-year head coach and how he wants to improve in the second year and all that other stuff, which I also thought was a bit on the presumptuous side, wouldn't you say? Like, you know, nothing's guaranteed, but he acknowledged that at the end there. And he's talking about a sense of urgency on a 2-win team in a rebuild with a rookie quarterback. And I think that's sort of, where was that in the beginning of the year? Where was that ever, the sense of urgency to even play Drake May didn't exist until Jacoby Brissett just completely lost it and couldn't play anymore. And I know he came back in and won a game, but you know what I mean? It was a dire situation with this offense and Jacoby Brissett. And they deviated from their plan. They put in Drake May, and the rest is history so far. But there was certainly no urgency. There was no urgency to win games. There was no urgency to get May out there and to get him NFL experience. And I think that that's not all he was talking about. But I do think that this is sort of the malaise you have at this point of the season with a team like this. And to hear him talking about a sense of urgency, I just thought was an interesting road for him to take. You know, it's good to have that in the locker room. But why now, I guess?
Especially because I think it runs contrary to a lot of what the season has shown, which is a very conservative approach to everything that they do.
Absolutely.
Everything is so conservative, particularly on offense, whether it's a big picture thing like when you decide to start Drake May or just the approach that you have with the running game and what you do on first and second down and then the position that puts you in and puts Drake May in now to try to make things happen, which to me, as fun as it is to watch him have 95 rushing yards and he's an incredible talent, It worries me about his development, which is what I've always worried about him playing a lot this season. Not about getting injured or anything like that, because that's just the reality of playing football. But the idea that he's not going to get to this point of being able to go through these reads, to process, to develop other skills as a passer, because he's always running for his life and taking off and trying to put the team on his back and basically going to the lowest common denominator of survival. And so it's kind of like frustrating to me to hear an abstract idea, like a sense of urgency in the locker room, and that he wants that to be there with the players individually, when they, the way that they approach these games and the way that they approach everything seems to be, well, let's play it safe. I don't know. Let's not push that. You know, we can't do that right now. We're still trying to, we're at the very beginning of this thing.
Well, they just keep saying things and like hoping it happens or expecting us to believe it'll happen, and nothing ever does. Everything they say isn't true. Like, they just continue to just, it feels like, lie to us or
what's
say
like,
it.
Like, what's another example of that?
All we want to do is run the football and play defense. The defense is one of the worst in football, and you can't run the football. You can't do either of those things.
And
that's what we want to be our identity of.
I think the defense side is a little different because, yeah, nobody expected them to be this sad, but they did have injuries and Jarrell Pepper's situation, and they traded Matthew Judon. So,
but
like,
then when you
there's
ask
some
them,
explanation
But then when
that.
You ask them about the run game, it's like they don't mention any of that. Instead, they just say, yeah, it's about discipline. It's about playing your gaps. It's about beating the guy in front of you. Well, then why aren't you? Like, what's going on? And then you ask about the receivers, and it's like Jalen Polk's like, yeah, I have no mental humps. And then Jerod Mayo comes out and goes, yeah, he's going through some mental things. Like, nobody's on the same page. Nobody. And it's just like I feel like he is just saying things that we want to hear instead of actually saying what's going on, ever.
Well, it was Focus Friday on Friday. Did you believe that?
No.
Believe that they were focused?
No. I don't think, I haven't seen anybody outside of the quarterback be focused once in like 4 weeks.
Yeah, it's been a sloppy season for sure. And I think that in general, when you talk about the urgency or lack thereof that's gone into this, that's something to work on. You know, I think ultimately the Mayo may have taken a look in the mirror and said, yeah, you know what, we haven't had much of a sense of urgency. I'm going to emphasize that this week, and we'll see if it makes a difference. I don't know if it's going to or not. I still think whether you have a sense of urgency or not, you win or lose these games in the NFL based on talent and ability to execute. And I don't know if lying, like, I hear what you're saying, Shime, about them
so maybe
saying something and doing
strong.
The other. I think they try and do it, they just can't.
Yeah, are, like, you, know, are you
they're
lying
just not good
if
enough.
You, it's like, yeah. Is it a lie if you believe it?
Or they're just saying something and hoping it kind of actualizes, and it just never does.
Right.
They're manifesting.
Yeah, they're trying to. Yes, that's exactly what it feels like. He's trying to manifest every day when he's up on the podium, and it's just not working.
Speak it into existence.
Yes, like an influencer at a.
Yeah.
Yes, or Aaron Rodgers.
Just here manifesting.
He's got a vision.
You know, belief is like it can be like an avalanche. It starts as a snowball, and once it gets going, it can really turn into a big avalanche.
I actually do feel like Jerod Mayo might be the type that has a vision board.
Oh, definitely.
Him sitting down with the team and saying, let's make vision boards about what we're going to do for the
that,
second
yeah.
half of the season.
I can see the vision board. No kidding. Yeah, that could be exactly what's going on. And listen, whatever it takes to get done what you need to get done. But this so far hasn't really been working this year. And I think that a lot of it has to do with the relative inexperience all around. When everybody's new to their job, this is what you have to do. You have to have a sense of urgency. You have to try different things, and you have to learn from your mistakes. I'm not sure they're doing that. With that in mind, let's get to the emotional polar coaster through the day.
I need my music. Gotta let it breathe a little bit as your boss, Greg.
What movie was this in?
Big fan.
What movie was this in?
This was in Beavis and Butthead.
To America, that's right, yeah. Except
that
it was.
That is what I think of it.
It wasn't the Ohio Players, though. I think it was like the Red Hot Chili Peppers covered it.
I think so, too. Yeah. I think I looked up that version, and there's a lot of sneaky swear words in it. So
okay.
I was like, maybe
not. Well, this is the original.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so our emotional polar coaster, where we ask you, just taking the temperature of the fan base, I asked, does your opinion of Drake May change based on whether he leads the team to any more wins this season? And I'll explain why I chose this question, but.
Which,
answer's
by the way, he's
simple.
Led them to zero wins
so far
this
year. Technically, he has one, but yes, fair point.
So yes or no, the yeses got 25%. So 25% say yes, their opinion kind of hangs on that. And 75% say no. And I actually thought it might be like more lopsided than that, because I do think with a lot of fans who are still paying attention to this team, the sense is, well, we got the quarterback, like, thank God. So as long as the quarterback continues to look good, the rest of the team, who cares, we'll figure that out later. I don't think that's a great way to look at it. But I also think it's interesting when you look at Caleb Williams on the other side, where I think because everybody made such a fuss about the situations that all these rookie quarterbacks were going into and how highly they were drafted. And Caleb Williams was supposed to be the best, and he was going into the best situation. Mm-hmm. And now, as you said, Arkan, like, Chicago fans are they're saying it's the end of the world because of the amount of losses that they have and the way that they've been losing recently. And I just think it's such different standards for these two franchises. And part of that is the risk. Like, when you start investing in your team and you are putting a rookie quarterback out there, the fans expect the standard to be higher. Over here, I guess, as how quickly Patriots fans have fallen, where they look at it and 75% say, I don't care if he gets another win. I'm just happy to have Drake May out there.
Yeah, I love Drake May more than anybody, but, like, I still think that wins should matter.
Thank
like
you.
I still think that he needs to
this
go out.
Voting is a
win
sham,
a
by the
game.
Way. These people are lying to themselves.
Like last
and
week,
that's the second time I've said that this week.
Last week, like, he should have won that game against Tennessee. Like, you should have won that game against Tennessee. It still irks the crap out of me. You didn't go for two in regulation to just win the game. And instead, you went into overtime, and he turned it. He was like, I need to be Superman, and I need to win it all here on one play. And there it goes. There goes the game. Like, it's just, it's frustrating. And yes, I do believe
I don't know, Shime. Are you going to start getting in the mode where anytime that they lose or something doesn't work, it's on Gerard Mayo and Alex Van Pelt and what they decide rather than Drake May?
No, didn't I just blame Drake May for throwing the interception?
Well, you said they didn't go for two.
They didn't go for two, but then he threw a pick in overtime.
Yeah, and I just said Drake May was like,
and they could have won that game. The game wasn't over. They could have won that game on that drive.
So, and that's what, and that 100%, like, you had over 2 minutes left to drive down the field, which he has done multiple two-minute drives now at this point and has been capable of getting you six on those two-minute drives, and yet he felt like he needed it all in one play. And that was something that is very unproductive. That
Kendrick Bourne also fell.
Also true. That definitely did happen, and if he didn't fall, it might have been a completion. But beside the point, like, he had that Josh Allen moment where he felt like he needed to be Superman, and that's not productive for a young rookie quarterback. It's not a good thing that he's believing that and thinking that, and it's not a good thing that the team is putting him in that position. And so, like, yeah, like, of course I'm going to blame Drake when he deserves to be blamed, but at the same time, 90% of the blame right now should be on the head coach and the offensive coordinator.
I agree. And the question is, does your opinion of Drake May, not that you blame him for the loss, but, like, does your opinion of him change based on either he wins or loses anymore this season? If he had hit booty in stride and he scored a touchdown, you wouldn't have a different opinion than him instead of throwing the intercept.
Everybody would think he's the next Tom Brady.
Absolutely. Everybody would be going crazy, be doing backflips if he had caught that ball. Or if he didn't underthrow it by 4 yards. Sorry. I mean, it wasn't a good throw. Either way.
And he just put it 65 yards on a rope, but continue.
He's 70. Well, okay, but where'd it go? It went up into the wind and he did no chance at it. But either way, Drake May, 75% of you are saying that you wouldn't have had any difference of opinion if he had led a touchdown drive at the end of that game. I don't buy that. I don't think that's true.
Well,
I don't think that's right. And you're going up against a team that's not very good this week. I don't think you're going to win the game. But, like, if he leads a drive or he has a big game and wins, you're not going to have any difference of opinion. And if they go out and lose, I don't buy that. I think these people are lying to themselves.
I think they are too. But I also kind of believe in that feeling from the fan base because, you know, there's the old stupid argument of are wins a quarterback stat. And I mostly think that they are, because of how important a quarterback is.
Sure.
But I look at this team, and when the stakes are so low in terms of where the team overall is going and the meaning of the season, Jacoby Brissett has that edge, and nobody looks at it and goes like, well, I'd rather have Jacoby Brissett out there and you put up, I don't know, 14 points or 17 points and you win like a nail biter at the end. We've seen that. And people just don't care to watch that. They want to see Drake May out there and develop and give you the hope for something in the future. So I do buy that people feel that way. I just think that it's important for a quarterback, even in their rookie season, to learn how to win.
Yeah,
and not let losing
be a winner.
Happen.
Exactly.
And
right,
learn how to, like, whether I'm not saying, like, Drake will never be able to put the team on his back. He's already doing it for most of the part of this offense.
But
it's important to learn how to come back or how to maintain a lead. And I guess it's about overall composure as a leader of the offense.
I agree with you. I just think I think you might be wrong in that I don't think these people are lying, because I think this amount of people is the exact same amount of people that want you to have the first overall pick. And so those two things to me generally align. Like, I don't care if you win games. I believe Drake May is the best. I want the first overall pick, which I don't agree with, by the way. I think that's stupid. I think that's idiotic. But I believe that there is a 70% of people want that at this point.
You're right. But that also implies that 75% of people think they've seen all they need to see see from Drake May after 3 weeks, and I think that's stupid, too.
Like, that's fair.
There's a lot of football left to play here. He's very early in his career. He's looked good, but he had 3 turnovers in this last game. What if he comes out and has another bad game with a bunch of turnovers? Your opinion's not going to change. No one's opinion's going to change. Like, that's, I'm sorry. And I know that's not really the win-loss question that you asked there, but that's part of it. And you can't just say, well, if he loses, I'm not going to be mad, but if he wins, I'm going to be happy. That doesn't, you know, you have to, that's just, you're rigging it that way. You know, well, yeah, I'm just not going to care about anything. If they lose, I'm not going to care. If they win, it's going to be great. Well, fine, then that doesn't really make much of a difference here. Like, your opinion will change.
Do you think it's in part because they have been fed all these lines about how much of a project he was and that he was going to be a Josh Allen type project where it's going to take a couple years? So, yeah, it's fine if he turns the ball over. I just want to see him out there playing. Like,
sure.
Do you think that plays into it?
I actually think, like, he benefits so immensely from having Josh Allen be out there a couple years before him.
Oh, yeah.
In line with what you're saying there, Shime.
So many quarterbacks do nowadays.
Where we're comfortable with the turnovers and the fumbles. I don't mean like us sitting in this room, but yeah. I think an NFL fan base overall, if the other side, the ceiling for talent is so high,
yep.
And that Josh Allen has shown, look, they haven't been in a Super Bowl, they haven't won a Super Bowl, so it's not like it's an incredible success project overall. But I think it changes the way that a lot of fans look at the quarterback position and saying like, well, you know, it's kind of more like a Rex Grossman model. Like, F it, I'm going deep, not in the Caleb Williams way.
Someone's down there.
Yeah. But it's I think if you hadn't had Josh Allen before, that we would be looking at Drake May a lot differently and saying like, oh my God, this kid, like he takes some crazy shots that don't work out.
How we evaluate quarterbacks now has entirely changed because of Josh Allen, right? And so like, as long as you see the offensive upside potential, you're willing to overlook all the turnovers early on because like, oh, he'll get better. Like, don't worry, he'll learn and figure it out. Whereas years ago, if a quarterback ever came in and turned the ball over 6 times in his first 3 games, a coach would be like, I'm going to go with the veteran guy who doesn't turn the ball over.
You would talk about it the way that we talked about Josh Allen in his rookie season, which is, this guy's crazy. He's hitting the person selling popcorn.
Which, by the way, Drake May, statistically, is far, far and away better than what Josh Allen did his rookie year.
So far, yeah, that's true. He is.
Again, small sample.
It's a small enough sample. I thought last week was Drake May's worst game. Do you guys agree with that?
I think up until...
I know he had that great play at the end, but all in all, I thought it was
his worst game.
Up until
the second half of the fourth quarter, I agree with you. He was having a tough time out there.
I think the Houston game was worse. Having gone back and watched the tape, like I think what he saw in that Tennessee game was... There was like nothing there. There was nothing for him. Whereas in the Houston game, I felt like he missed a lot, especially early on. He was very skittish.
He looked like he had jitters at the beginning of the first half of that.
But I also felt like in this Tennessee game, like Jeffrey Simmons was in his grill constantly. The Patriots had zero plan. They're like, we're going to move our best offensive guard to tackle this week while we face the best nose tackle we faced all year.
Well, don't worry. They're not moving anyone important around on the offensive line willy-nilly again this entire week.
Ben Brown had been your best offensive lineman for 2 weeks, and Jeffrey Simmons came in and ate his lunch. Like, it's just owned him. Just took him to school.
Ben Brown, somebody who was not part of the plan when you said you were going to run the ball and when you were trying to put together this offensive line. Now, again, you can't fault them for David Andrews getting hurt.
No.
That's not part of the plan. But then to pick up somebody off someone else's practice squad and say, now this is the guy who's the best offensive lineman?
Well, and your backup plan for David Andrews was Nick Leverett, who you then cut. Like, you didn't have a backup center going into the season. Your backup center was a former guard who had never played center, and you ended up cutting him. Like, that is horrendous planning by you, especially for a guy who's older in age and was injured last year in David Andrews. Like, this isn't a guy who has never missed a game before and is 25. It's a guy in his 30s who has missed time before and is on his way out.
And the kid they drafted can't get on the field either.
No.
Jake Andrews.
Jake Andrews stinks.
He never plays either. So, yeah, there we go. Lots to get to still here. I got a text message from Fitzy. He says he's in a street fight on the streets of Chicago, and he may have to call in a little bit later after he takes care of these
tough... A street fight?
No,
oh,
he
goodness.
Said that he's walking over there. He's walking to Soldier Field. He's looking to try and find Patriots tailgates, so perhaps it might be better to check in with you guys.
Probably one too many local IPAs last time.
Could be, yes. Last time we talked with Fitzy, now when I was here, last time I talked with Fitzy, was when those Maine people all... remember that?
I wasn't here for this.
They were dropping lobsters down his pants and stuff?
It got pretty uncomfortable, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Uncomfortable or... kind of delightful.
Well,
okay, Mego.
Depends who you ask, I suppose.
It sounded like Fitzy was having a good
Fitzy
time.
Fitzy was having a good time. I was uncomfortable. But yes, it was pretty hot. So we'll see if he can find any like-minded Chicago-based Patriots fans or maybe people who made the trip out to Chicago in order to watch this game as the Patriots taking on the Bears. We'll take you up to that at 1 o'clock here. It's WEEI Football Sunday. We got much more to get to as well, including Wiggy's Keys. We got the inactives coming up in about 1 hour from now. Andy Hart as well. That's all coming up right after this. WEEI Football Sunday. Christian Arkin, Megan Ottolini, Chris Scheim, and you at 617-779-7937. We got open phone lines. If you'd like to chime in on this one, Patriots and the Bears in Chicago. Supposed to be a very windy day. So windy, in fact, that it blew Fitzy's cell phone right out of his hand. And he'll be joining us now in about a half hour instead of at his usual time here at 10:45. We'll be talking to Fitzy at 11:20 as he's posted up at the Soldier Field tailgate looking for Patriots fans or, you know, just like-minded Bears fans or maybe just a bunch of weirdos from Maine who want to put a lobster down his pants. Either way, we'll be talking to him at 11:20. Earlier in the week, and there's a game going on right now, which I do want to talk about because this is
so
not how
bad.
I expected this game to go for the New York Giants, for Big Blue getting smoked right now by the Carolina Panthers.
They're driving.
Are they right now?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, they're at the Carolina 18.
All right, good. So maybe my bet will still survive. But yeah, it's not looking great right now. Either way, there's a game earlier in the week that was a great game. I thought one of the games of the year, honestly, the Ravens and the Cincinnati Bengals. That one came down to a 2-point conversion. And I just wanted to get your guys' take on this because the Patriots are coming off of a 2-point conversion kind of game where they didn't go for it, but they could have. People thought they should have.
We also saw a chance of that Bucks Chiefs game as well last
week. That's right, exactly. I thought they should have. I definitely thought they should have gone for two. Patriots. I thought that the Bengals were right to go for two. I can't believe they didn't throw the ball to Jamar Chase, who had 300 freaking yards and three touchdowns. But that's another story. Anyways, where are we all right now with the 2-point stuff? Should the Patriots have gone for it? I haven't talked to you guys. And what'd you think of the Ravens Bengals and how they dealt with it too?
Mostly, my fear is that whatever opinion I have would not even matter in terms of the opinions that would be on the sidelines because it's all driven by analytics.
Right.
I want to believe that's not how they're making the decisions with stuff like this, but I just feel that it's probably weighing very heavily with how they're making the decisions.
Yeah.
I just tend to like a more aggressive approach. I mean, I don't think you have to get extremely stupid with it, especially early in game scenarios, but when the game is on the line and you are looking at either being able to win or the, like we saw with the Patriots going into overtime, you can't bank on the overtime at all.
No.
Like, you just can't take it there. I'm always going to side with being more aggressive when it's an end-of-game scenario. I think you have to play for the win in end-of-game scenarios.
I think there is a case-by-case basis. So in that Cincinnati game, I disagree. I don't think Cincinnati should have gone for two.
Really?
They should have taken the extra point because the issue there is there was still 40 seconds on the clock, and the way Lamar had played in the fourth quarter, like, he easily could have gotten in field goal range to get them 3 points and win the game anyways, even if you do get the 2-point conversion. So you want to force him to at least try to do that instead of just giving them the win if you don't get it. And so, in my opinion, I think Cincinnati should have kicked the extra point. With, like, a team like Tampa Bay, though, like, against Kansas City. Kansas City's offense has not been explosive.
Wait, if they kick the extra point, then Jackson goes down and gets the field goal anyway, right?
Maybe, but you have to force him to do that. Otherwise, you at least get a chance, right? If you get the 2-point conversion and Jackson,
well, if you miss, you miss, of course. But yeah, but if you get it or if you kick the field goal, either way, the same outcome would happen if they drive down and kick.
Well,
the field goal.
So if you get it, right, Jackson then theoretically might have two opportunities to score.
Right.
With that final 40 seconds and or overtime.
Right.
Whereas with the New England Patriots, that wasn't the case. Like, that absolutely wasn't the case. There were zero
on the clock. Jackson had led touchdown drives in the previous four drives, I want to say. Every single drive in the fourth
quarter.
Exactly,
which is why even if you get
the... Which is why I say go for two.
But even if you go... So if you go for two, Jackson's just going to get them in field goal by your logic, right?
Maybe.
So like, so then it doesn't matter. You take the extra point and hope your defense makes a stop and you get the ball first in overtime, so you win.
Tucker's not been that good this year, by the way.
True.
Tucker's falling off a little
bit. That's very true.
Yeah.
And then with the Kansas City-Tampa Bay game, like, you just don't give the ball back to Patrick Mahomes under any circumstance. You try and get the win as fast as possible.
Analytics will never account for that.
No, because as soon
to,
as
like, work in a Patrick Mahomes,
as right. soon as the Chiefs won the coin toss, you saw they panned to Baker Mayfield and he puts his head back like, well, this game's over. I don't even get a chance to win. And so in that Patriots game, though, with zeros on the clock, you just go for a win. Mm-hmm. As a 2-6 team at the time, you absolutely just go for the throat. You had an awesome drive there to score the touchdown, a crazy play that resulted in you even coming close, you go for two to win the game.
And I agree with that, absolutely. The reason why I disagree with you about Baltimore and Cincinnati is because if you look at all the possible outcomes here, if you go for two and miss it, it's over. If you go for the field extra point and you miss it, it's over. So we know that for sure. If you kick the field goal, then you're basically ensuring that Jackson's going to have a chance for a full drive, not just 40 seconds, but you're going to go to overtime and he's going to get the ball and you're going to, you know, you're going to have to do that. And you're not, it's not guaranteed, but generally that's what happens. I think it's more common that both teams touch the ball in overtime than it's just one touchdown drive on the first drive. I feel like that doesn't happen as much, unless it's Patrick Mahomes. So, and maybe it would have with Jackson, I don't know, or maybe it would have with Burrow. They both were playing well, but I think that going to that point, instead of putting the pressure on the Ravens and Jackson to go and get into field goal range, I think that's sort of it. That's why I think if you go case-by-case basis, which is the only way to do this, forget analytics. Yeah. Analytics are ridiculous.
You have to throw those out.
I think you have to throw them out and go case-by-case. When the Patriots went for two earlier on in the year against, who was that against? Where they went for
Seattle?
Two and they didn't get it. It wasn't against Seattle. It was
Jacksonville.
Jacksonville, thank you.
Because they would have been down by six.
Right, and everyone's like,
seven.
You want to know if you need the extra one right early in the game. And it's like, no. At that point, taken the point, then they're coming back, and now they have pressure on them, and you get the ball back again.
It's
and
still
like
a
one-possession
game.
Exactly. Like, that's what I wanted to see there. And I think if you go case by case, this past week, for the Patriots, it's a no-brainer. Patriots should have gone for two. I think that the Bengals were right to do that as well. I just cannot believe that, first of all, they missed all those penalties, and there was like two penalties on that play. And second of all, that he went to the tight end on the 1 yard line.
Yeah. Tanner Hudson, too. Not even the good tight end.
Right. Yeah. It's this guy. He wasn't even in the end zone. He would have had to fight just to get in there, even if he caught the ball, which he didn't. Meanwhile, Jamar Chase is having the best game I've ever seen in my life. And he's got single coverage up on the top there, and the Burrow doesn't even look at him. I could not believe that. I thought that was crazy.
But with what you're saying about the Patriots, like, and not going for two, then I do think that circles back to being connected with what we hear this week and why it's frustrating from Gerard Mayo saying, we got to have this sense of urgency. It's like, well, where was the sense of urgency in that scenario? It was more like, okay, let's just survive and get to overtime.
It was conservative.
We'll figure it out there. It's always conservative.
They have been conservative all season, and it's kind of frustrating for a team that's been so bad. Like, at some point you need to be like, all right, it's 4th and 3, we're just gonna go for it. Like, we need some kind of momentum builder, we need to do this. Like, otherwise it doesn't matter, you suck anyways. So if you don't get the 4th and 3, well, you don't get the 4th and 3, it happens, and they get the ball at the 40, big deal. Like, go for it, try and get some sort of momentum. And yet they never do that. It is conservative to the extreme, and
it's
upsetting.
Again, you didn't have Patrick Mahomes on the other side.
Yeah, it's Mason
Rudolph,
Rudolph,
who you started out the game making him look like Patrick Mahomes.
Ugh.
It was a tough one, yes. 617-779-7937 is the phone number, because we're getting the diva treatment now from Fitzy. We'll be talking to him at 11:20. However, Tommy Curran, never a diva. Always a meat and potatoes guy. Always hits his mark at 11 o'clock, except that 1 week when he didn't. Anyway, he joins us next right here on WEEI Football Sunday.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.